Okay, because I'm in the great financial capital of Africa, I can talk about Twitter, right? So, David Stroud, some of you know him, leads a church in London. He's planted a number of others, and I follow him on Twitter. And yesterday, he quoted Thomas Jefferson, the third president of the United States, who was involved in writing their constitution. And this is what Thomas Jefferson said. On matters of style, flow with the current. But on matters of principle, stand firm like a rock. Wise. So we can float on that stuff. But on matters of principle, we stand firm like a rock. It reminded me of Jude, and so I'm going to read a couple of verses out of Jude. Jude, a servant of Jesus Christ and brother of James, so he's the younger brother of Jesus, to those who are called beloved in God the Father and kept for Jesus Christ, may mercy, peace, and love be multiplied to you. Beloved, although I was very eager to write to you about our common salvation, I found it necessary to write appealing to you to contend for the faith. It's one of these rock issues. You don't flow with this stuff. Don't flow with the current. You contend. Contend for the faith that was once and for all delivered to the saints. For certain people have crept in unnoticed, who long ago were designated for this condemnation, ungodly people who perverted grace and our God into sensuality. And so basically what Jude is saying, he's saying, I could write to you about a whole bunch of stuff, but I want to contend for some stuff. And he begins to list a few things that you do not float with the current with. Couple of things that you fight for as if they're the rocks in the riverbed. And this is the first one. He says that they've perverted grace. They've used grace. They've distorted a grace message for their own sensuality, for their own ends. So we can take the message of grace, and we can take that message and we can distort it to our own ends. He says, be careful of that. Stand against that. And then he says, and they deny our master and the Lord Jesus Christ. We fight for that. We preach Jesus. It's about Jesus. Am I right with the thing here? Now, I want to remind you, although you once fully knew it, that Jesus, who saved a people out of the land of Egypt, afterward destroyed those who did not believe. God is judge. Don't mess with that. This weekend, we got busy going through a series in Acts, and we're in Acts chapter 12. That's where Herod gets struck down and is eaten by worms. Now, you can't handle that text lightly, you know what I'm saying? So I said, so what's the point of the message? So on Sunday morning, I basically said this in all the sites that I was preaching in, is that God's message is this: if you oppose God, you're going to lose. Another part of this message is, God kills people. This text doesn't say that Herod, as he was climbing off his throne, slipped on a banana peel and accidentally died. It says an angel of God came and killed him. God kills. And so somewhere in the message, you can see where I'm just going from bad to worse here, I said, I brought Nebuchadnezzar into the equation, who had been grazing out in the grass, and God had been teaching him a lesson. What was God saying to Nebuchadnezzar? He was saying to Nebuchadnezzar, bow, I am the King of Kings, you're a mortal king. What was he saying to Herod? When he was freeing Peter from jail, he was saying, bow, Herod. God's a judge, God kills, and God says, bow. And so I ended my message like this. He says, Obama, bow. Grant Crawford, bow. You, sir, bow. You wouldn't believe how many people got saved on Sunday morning. A whole bunch of guys who've been drifting along in our services, all of a sudden, bam, God kills, God judges, God says, bow. Yes, sir, I'm bowing. Can't mess with this stuff. Can't mess with it. We fight for it. Fight for it. And yet verse 8 says, and yet talks about some people here who, relying on their dreams, defile the flesh and they reject authority. Why do they get into sensuality? Why do they cause hassles in the church, rejecting all sorts of authority? Why do they do that? Because they're relying on dreams. They're relying on fanciful thoughts. Instead of relying on the word, you don't mess with the word. Fight for that thing. It's a rock in the riverbed. You don't flow with the current there. He lists a whole bunch of other stuff, but I want to bring us to his climax, to the conclusion of what he's saying. And he says, this is the thing that he's saying that we need to fight for. And have mercy on those who doubt. Save others by snatching them out of the fire to show others and show others mercy and fear. To show them fear, show them mercy. But what you're trying to do, snatch them out of the fire. I want to fight for that thing. And so as local churches, we fight for the word. We fight for preaching Jesus. We fight for God as judge and God, the gracious, gracious one. And we're fighting to rescue people from the fire. And so the question then is, well, how do we do that? Now, how, I think, sort of merges into style in many senses. And so the rock that we're fighting for is this. We want to see people saved. How it's done varies in millions of different ways, because God is infinitely creative and infinitely wise, and he uses us in infinitely different ways in that regard. So what I'd like to do this morning is speak on something really practical. And it fits into this category of style. And so some of you sitting here today will say, I don't really like that style. And that's fine. As long as we agree on this thing, one of the things we're contending for is plucking them from the fire. Whatever way you pick, plucking them from the fire. Now, one of the ways that God's doing that in the world today is using multiple sites of one church. And I've been very reluctant to speak on this, and I'll tell you why. We've been doing this for 7 years now, and I haven't wanted to speak about it. I haven't spoken any public forum like this on this subject for these reasons. One, I don't think it applies to 80% of any audience. So it seems crazy to speak to 20% of a crowd. Two, we're still rookies in this. 7 years is hardly a proven track record to be able to speak about it with any authority. And thirdly, I think that it's in this element of style. It's in that category. And I don't think we should get too dogmatic about these things, but I'll tell you why I've decided to speak on it this morning. I've been concerned by a number of issues. It's become the vogue thing. It's become the end thing. So even if it's not for you, it's probably a good idea that you put your thought and your mind into what's going on. So at least you can comment with some degree of understanding. It seems to me that it's almost, if a church is struggling these days, the go-to solution is hook them up with a bigger church. It just seems to be. I'm not saying it's wrong. It looks like it's becoming the default setting. It's not working. Okay, hook up with another church. Hook up with the NCF. Hook up with the City Hill. Hook up with a Cornerstone. And I think it can work in numerous instances. And I think sometimes it works to get an emergency sorted out. We've taken over a church a little while ago where there was immorality. Church was in tatters. It wouldn't have existed if someone hadn't come and grabbed hold of it. There was a solution of sending somebody else in, but it helped doing that. Secondly, I think what it can do is give guys who are leading churches who ought not to be a way out. But so I'm not against it in any way, but I do think we need to start talking about it, because it is not the only way, and I don't think it should be the default setting. My personal opinion, but this is a style matter, it should be a last resort. And so let's talk about it, and this is essentially what I'm wanting to do. Let me tell you one other reason why I want to speak about it, is that when we don't speak about these things and we don't understand things, things get very clumsy and cluttered and complicated. And when church gets complicated, it obscures Jesus. Church is about Jesus. It's about preaching him. It's about us becoming like him. And if you don't understand your structures, you begin to serve your structures rather than your structures serving the gospel and serving Jesus. And so hopefully by the end of the day, I haven't created more confusion. I've just been able to speak into the subject to clear the decks a little bit so that we can keep Jesus the main thing and to understand and embrace some of the stuff God's doing today if we need to. Is that right? I'm going to look at this. Why would we do such a thing as multi-site? Number two, I want to look at the benefits of doing a thing like that. Number three, I want to look at the dangers of doing multi-site. Number four, I want to look at the types of guys who definitely shouldn't do it. And then I'm going to end with, if I've got the time, four models that I have seen. I've experimented with two of them. Four models that I have seen in the world today. Just a couple of pros and cons, just so that you understand a bit more fully. And then if we've got time, I'll open up for questions afterwards. The reason I started with Jude was this. This whole talk today morphs into the section of style. But the essence behind it is this. And this is why we, so let me cover this first question first. Why did we as a local church move into doing church at multiple locations? For one reason and one reason only, to see the lost saved. We were stuck in the southern suburbs of Pietermaritzburg, very marginalized. Some people, we were like, we are around about 300 meters away from a game reserve. You know, there's lions, zebras, not lions, there's zebras, giraffes, wildebeest, and us, 300 meters away. And then there's the sprawling village of Maritzburg beyond that. And so we decided that if the Maritzburg was growing out in another direction, we should go there. Plant a church or take 100 people and get the thing going with like a turbo boost behind it. That was the reason behind why we did so. It's for the sake of people being saved. And so what happened was in 2006, I took a trip to America to go and have a look at what the Americans were doing. There weren't too many people in this country doing it at that stage. And I didn't like what I saw. I didn't like the TV preaching, although I think some guys are really cool on TV. I'm just not very good at that. I didn't like the organization behind some of it. I didn't like the community, the lack of community in some of it. So I came back more confused than ever. And what we decided to do was go into our northern suburbs, took a school hall, took 100 people, and said, let's try, we'll experiment. And it happened quite easily. If you do your first site, it's actually not so traumatic, especially if you've been doing multiple meetings on the same location. It's just actually like doing an evening meeting. But the moment you pick the third one, when you're doing what you originally were doing, you've your first pioneer section, and then you go out to another one, suddenly you've got to have these discussions we're having this morning. Because you can't split yourself three ways. You can't straddle three ways. And so, what we found when we made this move is that we could shape our church services differently. We could sing differently. It smelled different. It reached a different community, and it got us very excited. And so, that's why we did it. And we haven't changed our motive in the slightest. The reason we'll start a new site is because there's a community that won't travel to us, so we travel to them. And so that's why we've done it. So what did we find the benefits of doing such a thing? Let me go through it very quickly because I want to get to these models. Firstly, we saw that a whole lot more people were involved on the mission of Jesus. To run a meeting, we invented as many activities as we could invent. 53. So children's church is one of those activities. Preaching is another one of those activities. The sound guy is another one. We invented 53 of these things. And we're trying to invent more all the time. Why? Because the more people get involved, does my voice sound bad? Thank you for that. The more people that get involved, the more people take ownership. And when you move into a new community and you've got ways for brand new people who are hooking up with you to get involved, they feel like they belong straight away. So we'll create things like for the elderly. Who's going to look after? Who's going to look for the elderly in the car park, find places for them? In our neck of the woods, give them hot water bottles in the middle of winter, have a little granny's lounge afterwards where the biscuits are not so hard, where they can go through them with their teeth, and earplugs when they need them. Who's going to look after them? So we create that. You don't have to have that to make a church happen on a Sunday, but it's cool to. You can involve 10 different people that weren't involved before. So we see the priesthood at a greater level. Number two is that we see musicians coming out of the woodwork. How many churches have I been to and they say, we've only got one band? But I'm telling you, if they just ask this question, who knows how to play an instrument? Even if it was the triangle in grade 5, who knows how to play an instrument? You'll be surprised how many will put their hands up. And actually, they're not volunteering. Why? Because they think the pros are on the stage already. As soon as you give them another stage, they put their hands up. And guess what? Different bands can sound differently. Just like different preachers sound different, different worship leaders should sound different. And suddenly, you're appealing to and getting the gospel to a whole different crew of people. Number three is we suddenly saw a whole lot more preachers having to be trained up. That's not the case if you show a video, but if you don't show a video, you need a preaching team. For me, it's the most exciting meeting of the week. I sit down, my preachers are planned right up until Christmas time, and they know what they're preaching until Christmas time. When they arrive at a preaching meeting, they're coming armed and dangerous. And that's a two-hour theology, contextualization, aiming at the verdicts, rubbing off on each other. We laugh. We dissect the Word of God. It puts the Word right in the heart of what we're doing, and it sharpens the preachers so they know what they're gunning for. They're not just wafting and waiting. They're wafting and waiting, and they're aimed in a particular direction. Now, number three, whatever number, pioneers. When your team is constantly looking into the next suburb to see if we can open another site there, you get pioneering back. You know, when you get big in one big building, you can morph into a bit of a slumber mode. But this sort of puts frontier work on the page again. Suddenly, you've got pioneers everywhere. It's pretty cool. A faith adventure. Every time you open a new building, there's a faith adventure. There's a faith finance adventure. Talk about that a little bit later if you want. But there's also an adventure on starting into new areas. It's just really cool. Get the guys trusting God again for things that they haven't trusted Him for a long, long time. I think it keeps Jesus in front of what the church is doing. Because I suppose if you were unwise, you could make your church the main focus. But if everything that you are doing is for the purpose of getting Jesus to your city, this is a great way of doing it and keeping it alive in the minds of your people. And then this is the one that's most exciting to me, so I'm going to take a little bit of time here, is that I've seen visionaries emerge. You know, in the old days, we used to say two visions equals division, which is true if you're just in one space. But if you're in multiple spaces, you can have multiple visionaries, as long as the multiple visionaries are led by another visionary, right? And so let me tell you some of the things that happened this week. Conversations I've had this week with guys leading different sites. The guys in Moy River are wanting to go into the school. So they've seconded one of our interns up into that area and got him into school. I didn't come up with that idea. There was somebody else, some other visionary came up with that idea. There's another site that it meets at night, hasn't had children's ministry. Not my idea, their idea. This week, start our children's ministry in the evening meeting, change the time of the evening service. That's a visionary call, not by me. Howick, one of our other sites, has just taken their 12 strongest men into Zimbabwe for 4 days on a mission trip. Why? Ray Oliver leads that site, and that's how he builds leadership teams. He's taken an old trick out of the manual from 1980. Took his strongest men, chuck them in a convoy, take them over the border of the Limpopo, rough them up a bit, see who's got the goods. That wasn't my call. That was the visionary of that particular site. Another site this week has decided to run a second meeting in another venue. Not my call. The call of the visionary at that site. Another site asked if they could suspend the preaching program that we're going through Acts. So they're going to be missing Acts chapter 15 because they want to deal with, they're calling it, it's in the Indian community of our city, they're calling it Revival Sunday. It goes down very well in the Indian community. So they're doing that this weekend. I'm being ushered in as a guest speaker at 7 o'clock to speak about the infilling of the Holy Spirit. But that was not my idea. I was given my title last night. So our guys on campus have last night ran a, well, I'm telling you, these are recent. These are not pulled out of the ark. These are decisions that visionaries are making every single week. These guys, it's exam time, right? So they called a campus-wide exam prayer meeting. And they're expecting as many unbelievers at their prayer meeting as believers. Why? They're asking for help, you know, some divine intervention. So now that was not my idea. I've forgotten about exams. There's a visionary ensconced in this place. So what? He's making visionary calls. And I could go through. There's some really other exciting ones here. I'll tell you another one. A township site on the way behind Bidmore Dam phoned me up and said, hey, listen, we've come up with a novel idea to invite the whole community. We want a white guy to preach in Zulu. Can you pull that off? So I can't do it, but I found a white guy to preach in Zulu. What his doctrine is, I have no idea. But I know that he's saved, and I know he speaks Zulu, and I know he's white. That's all I know. So, but why? You see, these visionaries are doing their thing. And it's going where we're going. And so it releases visionaries. Another thing that I think it gives you huge momentum. Because if you're pulling in the same direction, it gives you huge momentum. If you're all pulling off in multiple different directions, what you're doing is you're creating a great church planting movement, which is great. But you're going to be separate churches within a few months or years, depending on how scattered, how fast you're running in different directions. Prayer, I think collectively, when you decentralize prayer into these communities, they take ownership of prayer. So we don't have one massive prayer meeting anymore where we pull in all the sites to come and pray. Why? Because it's just the geography is a bit rough down there. And so, but we have much more people praying weekly now, but it's just in decentralized venues. And so if you look at the amount of prayer, I think cross-subsidizing the guys who are starting off, when you guys know who planted churches, it takes years before you can bring on your next staff member or get some capital together to do an outreach initiative. This way, the wealthier sites look after the poorer sites, and that's pretty cool. Gets things going quickly. I think it gives you reach into communities that you would have never reached before. There are some people who will drive. There are very few unbelievers who will drive. So the Christians, they'll drive to a good church. But an unbeliever, you've got to go and fetch him. You've got to go find someone who's willing to go and fetch him. I've already spoken about keeping the main thing the main thing. I think it keeps the church straight if the object is to see people become disciples of Jesus. Because you get very busy. You can't get tangled up with all sorts of other nonsense if you're busy getting the gospel into your city this way. You're just too busy to start fighting each other. You've got a world to reach. So as you can see, I could spend 2 hours just speaking about the benefits of all these sites, but that would defeat my object this morning. So I just need to get that out of the way. I'm a huge fan, if God is in it, of taking the mission and multiplying it. Whether it's multiplying it in one meeting, that you're doing multiple meetings, or whether you take it into a community, Jesus multiplied out his team. He sent out the 72, 2 by 2. He sent out the 12. Sometimes they went as a team, other times he multiplied them out. It is not unbiblical. It is, and I'm also not saying it's biblically imperative. It's abiblical. It's a style issue, but we've got to talk about it. You with me? Okay, now let me tell you why this is a very, very, let me change the mood. I wish I could have like the Jaws music playing background right now as I begin to speak. Because I think at the wrong time, with the wrong people, with the wrong motive, this is extremely hazardous. It's life-threatening. Let me tell you why. Number one, if you haven't got the resources or momentum to do it, and you multiply what you have already, you can slow down your momentum, your movement forward. It's like taking a teeny-weeny snowball as it starts to roll down a mountain and just chopping it in two, having it to start again. If you do it too early, or if you do it at the wrong time, it can cut the momentum of what you're doing. Another problem that we stumbled into, if your church is reasonably big, and you send off a small crew to plant a multi-site, You can have a whole bunch of causal people who are causal along this cause. We want family church to go. And you thought you were sending your pioneers, but you were actually sending your critics. And they say, don't you remember when church used to be like this? This is so cool. It's like a lounge again. It's like, this is family. Forget that big thing over there. This is what we want. Now, in one sense, in a small relationally cohesive unit like that, you can become quite sticky and get people that would find it difficult to join a big community. But if you overdo that, you won't grow because you don't want to grow. They don't want to grow. They're saying, we want to stay a little family. And that might be a strategy. You could just roll out 1,000 of those. But that's, for me, is home groups. I don't know why you're going to do it on a Sunday, but anyway. So I think another problem is fatigue. I've got a friend, Nick Hardy. Some of you know him. This is what Nick does. When he preaches on a Sunday morning, he says to me, Crofts, I could never preach twice on a Sunday. I preach my message, and I put everything on the table. My guts, my heart, my emotion, my energy, my family, everything. I dump it on the table, and I sleep the rest of Sunday. If you preach like that, well done. What you should do is build a massive stadium and just do it once. Just do it once. Because if you wired that way and you try and split yourself up to preach 3 or 4 times on a Sunday, you're going to become very boring. Your preaching levels are going to shrink. And that's probably the very thing that God's using to grow your church. And so some guys, you know, can you imagine if we fed guys like Tony Sivright Red Bull? Be scary, like dancing off the roof, right? Some guys don't need Red Bull. They need multi-sites just or multiple meetings just to exhaust themselves so the rest of us can catch up with them. You know, if you're not in that category, if you're in the category you need Red Bull when you wake up at morning tea and at lunchtime, don't try multi-site because it's going to be hard work. You're going to die of fatigue. And I tell you, I know a lot of pastors who washed up. They might have had a 20-year lifespan, but because they multi-sited this thing, they've shrunk their lifespan down to 10 years because of what they've done. I think another thing that gives me concern is that, and you'll know this when you've multiplied your Sunday meeting out. If you multiply your meeting, you say you've got a meeting this size, around about 150 people here today maybe. You multiply that, you're only meeting at 9 o'clock in the morning. If you multiply that to 8 and 10, you know that it's not going to go 75-75. You know that, eh? It's going to go like 150. Now, you've got to ask yourself, have you got the emotional robustness after you've used to preaching to a full hall of 150 to stand up and you blink and you're looking at 50? Do you know what that does to a preacher? If you're not preachers, you don't understand what I'm saying, but you know what it does to a preacher? We had revival last week. God was here. Now, what's happened? It's like God's left Jesus with his Holy Spirit. He's gone. It's like you've got to understand that that's what happens. You've got to understand. You've got to be able to cope with that. You can preach to the big and you can be able to preach to the small. I think another problem with if you're not geared for this is that your meetings can become dull. This is my number one audit as I look across our meetings. Has it lost its edge, Lord? Has it lost its vibrancy and its life, Lord? You know, when Barnabas came into Antioch, he came looking for signs of life, evidence of God's grace. You see, there's a big difference between running the comrades and running a 100-meter sprint. And when you're communicating the gospel, you want explosive, because the modern man's not going to sit there and run the comrades with you. He's not going to come week in and week out if you're like all plodding along. You've got a moment with him, and you've got to go past him like the speed of sound. And if your meetings become dull, I'm telling you, you'll tap off on seeing people saved. And that will have a knock-on effect to the motivation and the rest of what happens in the life of your church. So you've got to be careful about becoming dull. It's the number one thing that multi-siting and multi-meetings have got to guard against. And so practically, I mean, we could go into this if you want to, but practically, You've got to make sure that you've got enough volunteer teams. If you've only got enough to handle one set of children's church teams and you can't multiply that thing out, don't do multi-site, because you're going to ask those children's church guys to do it twice and you're going to kill them. They're going to become like long-distance runners instead of sharp and vibrant. And they're going to bore the kids to death. If you battle to raise volunteers, if that's a constant problem, don't try to multi-site. First, ask God to give you that skill. If you have not got this conviction that every time you ask someone to do something, you are blessing them, don't do multi-site. If you think when you ask someone to get involved or to serve in the life of your church, you're asking them for a favor, don't go anywhere near multi-site. You've got to have this thorough conviction that every time you ask someone to do something, it is the greatest blessing from heaven that you are giving this guy. It's like you're giving him a Lamborghini for Christmas, whatever you've got parked outside there. It's like that. Mustang. Because if you haven't got volunteers, you're crazy even contemplating this. I tell you another thing that has concerned me is the mergers of churches. Why has that been worrying me? And it's out of the sites that we've done, let me get my percentage right, less than 10%, 10% have been mergers with other churches. The rest of them have been planted. And if you had to give me the choice, I would take planting a site over merging 99 times out of 100. 99 times. But I've been concerned about this knee-jerk reaction for a number of reasons. Why? Let me give you this little maxim. I hope you remember this. Man does not live by branding alone. Churches do not grow by branding alone. You can't come and stick an NCF sticker on your church and expect that to grow the church or any other church. You cannot. And so just because you've signed up, I think some people spiritualize it and say the grace that is on that house is going to drift over, and the miracle that happened there is going to be a miracle that happens with us. Not so, sir. Why do visitors come to a church? They come to a church because the people that are in that church invite their friends. So just signing up, if the lead guy leading the church wasn't able to, with his eldership team, to engender trust and mission into the life of that church, just because he's now hooked up with another organization stroke church doesn't mean it's going to automatically happen. And just by removing him and bringing in, you ought to ask yourself this question, what makes a thing grow? God makes a thing grow, and God uses leaders, and it happens. There's no shortcuts. It's one disciple at a time. And I'll tell you what, some of these movements around the world that are gobbling up little churches and do not have a leadership development ethic, there's a bubble developing that's going to crash like the American economy. Because your branding and your corporate momentum and the hype around it is going to die. And if you haven't got disciples that have become leaders holding the thing together, it's going to crash. Mark my word. Going to crash. One disciple at a time, one leader at a time. There's no shortcuts to it. And I think it's also difficult. I mean, one particular church that we connected with was a church that Peter Howard Brown, some of you will know Peter, led for 15 years or 12 years. Now, Peter is very similar to me in our outlook. Went to the same school. We've got similar values. We were working with the same team for the whole time that he was leading that church. The church is 740 meters away from the church where I lead my church. Same neighborhood, same suburb. Half that church were disgruntled NCF people that went there anyway in the first place. And we joined. That genetic and our genetic is as far away as the North Pole from the South Pole. I'm telling you. It's been a good thing in hindsight, but I'm telling you what, you can't just I remember listening to one guy when we were all experimenting with this thing, some friend of mine down in the Cape somewhere. And he said this, I'm going to download my DNA into that site. It's like something out of a Space War movie. Bzz, like an infusion of DNA. It just doesn't happen like that. And if it does happen, it happens over years. How's a DNA created? With stories and with victories and with failures and with people. Not with concepts and branding. And so I also think there's another problem with it. If the sites are so far away that the relationships are not real, so what holds you together is structure, policy, and money. If that holds you together, you're this far away from denominationalism. I think a definition of denominationalism is government without relationship. Policies hold you together, structures hold you together, systems hold you together, not relationships. And so I would just question the extent to which that can work. So, are you with me? Have I made some enemies? Here we go, number four. So, first thing I've looked at is why we did it, to see people saved. Second thing I've looked at is some of the benefits. Thirdly, I've had a look at the dangers of it. Now, I would like to look at this. Here are some signs, I've covered one or two of them already, that if you tick yes for these signs, you should really be interceding and praying and asking God very seriously whether you do multi-site in any form. One, I've said it and I put it at the top of the list. If you battle to raise volunteers, if you can't do that, don't go there. Number two, if you've never run more than one Sunday meeting in your life, practice in your own building first. Because you know why? If the worship leader doesn't pitch up at 8, you can just phone the 10 o'clock guy and tell him to come earlier. But if he's the other side of town, you've got a problem. If the guys didn't, we haven't got a setup team for 10, they can just ride on the back of the 8 o'clock crew. And what you do is under your same roof with the same crew, you learn lessons that you don't want to learn geographically dispersed. So number two, if you've never run more than one meeting in your local church, don't try and do a whole bunch in the city. Number three, if you haven't got sufficient energy reserves, cover that one as well. Number four, if you don't have the numbers to carry you once the people have left your sight, that's the issue of momentum. And then this is the most important one. If you do not have a personal conviction that God has spoken you to do it, it might be a matter of style. It might not be a life and death issue. But I'm telling you, friends, we've got to walk by faith. We've got to be led by the Holy Spirit, being led by God, not cut and paste what the guys did down the road. You cut and paste what the guy does down the road, you're in big trouble, especially in a thing like this, which is going to stretch your resources, stretch your people, stretch your conviction. So if you've got that niggle, wait until the Holy Spirit's spoken to you. You got it? Okay, let me cover some models quickly for you. And as I do that, I think just the mechanics behind it will become clear, and then let's throw it up for some questions, and we can talk about this rather than have a guy speak about it. I wonder if you could put your first one up for me there. Okay, let me tell you a story about this. Okay, if Bill Hybels ever got this tape, and he never will because he's a big fish and I'm not even a tadpole, but if he did, he would probably be upset because I'm probably misrepresenting him, but I need to tell you a story that explains my understanding of this. In 2006, when I went to go and look at multi-site models, I had an appointment to see Bill Hybels. I walked into his office. I don't know how my PA arranged it, but she did. I had this little moment with Hybels, this little African boy. I walk into his office with one Stephen Wimble next to me. He was on my team at the time. And while we were standing there talking to his PA, he had one of his breakdowns. He had a physical breakdown. His body collapsed under the strain of leading Willow Creek. And he was carted off to hospital. And so we sort of walked around stunned. We'd flown all the way to Chicago to see him, asking God to tell us about multi-site. And the only lesson he gave us was that it can kill pastors. So We were holding our briefcases, wandering down the passageway, thinking, okay, God got our attention. As we get to the corner, the tour guide, they've got plenty of them there at Willow Creek, said to us, wouldn't you like to speak to this guy? This guy is a campus pastor. So you wanted to find out from Hybels, but why'd you find out from this guy? So the guy said to us, you're from Africa, you've flown all this way, Bill's not here, you want to find out about campuses? I'm your guy. So he hands over his baby, he had been on paternity leave, hands over his baby to the tour guide, and he leans over to me and he says, I'm resigning on Monday, do you want to know why? So now I'm thinking, oh my hat, here we go. Can kill pastors and the campus pastors don't like it. This wasn't a great introduction for me and multi-site. And so this is what he said. He described a matrix to me. Now, I'm pretty sure Bill didn't design it this way, but this is the view of what they were experimenting with in the early 2000s, which caused a campus pastor to leave. You see, in any church, you will have a preaching function, right? You will have an administrative function, right? You will have a children's church function. You will have a discipleship function, which will include integrating people into your church, raising up of leaders, establishing home groups, working those small groups. You will have that in place, and you will have worship and someone in charge of worship. Now, at Willow Creek, those functions are done by world experts. So the children's church, Promised Land person, has written books, man, run seminars, is a star in that. And so these functions all exist at an incredible high level at Willow. What they did is they planted a site, and they put this guy who spoke to us in charge of the site and said, look, for your site to run, you need an admin guy, you need a preaching guy, you need a children's church guy, you need a discipleship guy, and you need a worship guy. We'll give you the best we've got. Now you go and start that site. And so off he went. And I think he grew it to 1,000, 2,000, whatever, that's small in American standards. And he was very happy for a little season. Until the expert in children's ministry started telling his children's church guy what to do. And suddenly you have a matrix. The campus pastor is saying do this. The guru is saying do that. And there's an explosion on campus. And the same was happening with his worship guy talking to the worship guru. And his admin guy talking to the admin guru. He says it's chaos. There's explosions all over the place. I'm disregarded. A matrix system. So you've got to be careful of it. What do you got to be careful of? You've got to be careful of lines of communication. You've got to be careful of delegated authority, who you've given authority to. You've got to be careful of authority and responsibility. Who's got the final call on the matter? You say, Grant, this decision that this guy's made to run a campus prayer meeting, for example, now, was he able to make that decision? Yes, I'm not even going to overrule that. You've got to have the lines of communication clear. So I would say, if you're going to set yourself up the way that they did, just be very careful of a matrix developing, because you will have conflict everywhere. So that informed the way that we built. But I've seen another way that guys build, and let's go there. That's the congregational model. And so, yeah, same thing. This church has got an ability to lead worship. It's got the preaching function, the admin function, the worship function, and the discipleship function. And what they do is they start a new site. Now, this is the most common way that multi-site happens in the NCMI tribe togetherness. This is the most common way around the world. And this is how they do it. We pick a good guy. Because why? Because we are church planters. That's why. That's in our genetic. That's in our DNA. And we give these guys who are going to plant a site. We give find the best guy we got. And we give them Dudley's manuals, which are still in, they're not out. And you give them a few other resources, and you send them off, and you go say, go make it happen, my boy. So the visionary is leading the worship guy, the visionary is leading the admin guy, and the visionary is leading the discipleship guy. And he could have, you know, hundreds of small groups under him, and he's leading the worship guy, and the worship guy could have stacks of different bands, And he's also leading every visionary or site pastor that goes out to plant the sites. And there's no matrix. That's so cool about that. That guy who's leading that site is in complete command. And he alone reports to the visionary guy. And he gets all the help that he asks for. Because the visionary guy can say, hey, worship guy, go help him. His worship stinks, man. And he sits at an elders forum with these guys, but they're his peers. They're not above him. They're not below him. It's a very horizontal structure. There's some great value to this way of doing it. It's very simple. There's no structures. There's no nothing. You just find a church planting type guy, give him the right manuals, give him the mountain to climb, and say, look, we'll back you. Go, boy. That's very simple, right? The problem with it, and there's no complication. The problem with it is that I think it's pretty slow. It's as slow as planting a church, in my view. Unless you gave them like 500 people to start. But generally, you send them out. This model, they generally send them out with about four guys. They say, go, give it a go. It's like church planting. I mean, it's good that he's got financial stability. It's good that he can call on you. So maybe it's a little quicker than church planting, but not much quicker. The other thing about this is that he has to relearn lessons that you guys have learned for the last 20 years. The way that he does worship, the way that he does his meetings, the way that he preaches, because generally this method has not got a common preaching pool even. Those guys preach their own messages. And if they're running a series, they generally preach their version of that series. Another great benefit of that method is that what you're doing is you're establishing churches that you could lop off at any time and they become local autonomous churches. It's a great church planning method. But I think it's pretty slow. And so it's got pros and it's got cons. I think another con, another negative, if you pick the wrong guy to go and start, he's not even as hungry as a church planter. Why? Because he knows his salary is covered. And he knows there's backup. He can go on holiday and they'll send someone in. So he's not really as hungry. So if you've picked the wrong guy, it's not slow. It can actually just never take off. So I flirted with this in the early days. I tried. In fact, we'd tried a certain model, and I tried with two sites. I called them light sites. I said, go, boyki. And I nearly killed the five guys that went with them. So that is a good model if you're not administratively wired. If you're planning to make them churches pretty soon, you've got some pretty good guys. You're not ready to plant yet, but this is a good practice run. And if you don't mind that it takes ages to reach those communities, congregational model. Here's another model. This is the model that we did. This is a great model if you've got lots of energy, you've got a reasonably sized church, and you don't go over seven sites. If you try and do what we did was we took this to 11 sites, I nearly killed my main team. I'll tell you what happened to my main team. My admin guy had a burnout. My discipleship guy got cancer. My worship guy asked for a series of PAs who all resigned, and he stopped writing songs. My children's church guy came to me and said, I want to plant a church. I said, why? I said, you're running. He says, listen, I'm running 13 children's churches right now. Planting a church has got to be a hell of a lot easier than that. I'm going to go and plant a church. And so we nearly killed him. And the only guy who survived was me in charge of the preaching. Why? Because I had lots of people to delegate to. And I could say, it's my job to delegate. So it wasn't weighing on my shoulders. But let me tell you, now that I've dissuaded you from going big on this, there's a guy in America who does a similar thing. His name's Matt Chandler. I've just found out about him. He's got a huge church. I think somewhere between 10 and 20,000 people. But guess what? He's only got three sites. So he can pull this one off. He's got massive sites. This method, you will plant sites of hundreds very quickly. Hundreds of people very quickly. I'll tell you what the philosophy behind it is. It's a one church model. There's no matrix here. So in other words, the guy who's in charge of worship, he's in charge of worship at your next site. His band at the main site and the planted site all report to him. Is there a site pastor that actually hangs out there? If there is, his only job is to build a bit of community. It's not governing in the worship arena, because you've got a worship guru who knows how to do worship, and he can roll out 3 or 4 bands easily at your next 3 or 4 sites. You're not learning new lessons. He pulls musicians from wherever he needs them. He mobilizes them. He does it very efficiently. The same with children's ministry. If you've got a good children's ministry operational and you've been able to multiply it, what you can do then, who's the best guy to roll that out? Not some, you know, Superman that you've picked who's going to be a hero in every of these disciplines. It's your children's church guy. He can take his very best and put them in the plant and raise up new guys. And they're reporting to him. And he's living in that world. What is this? There's another name for this model. I would call this the specialist model. Because the specialist in children's ministry is working into that field on all your sites. And so you can see them as these giant funnels. So are there worship people, children's people, admin people, discipleship people, and preaching people at the sites? Yes, but they all report in the specialist zone. You know what I'm saying? So the admin guys are all specialist administrators. And you know what happens when you specialize and you centralize like this is that it grows like wildfire. So I'll tell you the story when we went to Howick. Howick is like a sleepy geriatric ward of Peter Maritzburg. Now, I know that some of you think Maritzburg is a geriatric ward of the country, but this is the geriatric ward of Maritzburg. We only had one home group out there. It's 35 kilometers from us. At our very first meeting, we had 300 people at that meeting. Why? Because we've done it this model. Now, if we had sent a hero out there and said, off you go plant in Howick, even if his name was Ray Oliver, you know how long it took Ray Oliver to get 80 people in Maritzburg? 10 years. Took Ray, planted in 1973. When I joined in 1983, there were 80 people. And so no matter how big the gifting is, if you start like at it slower, why did they suddenly develop 300 people? I'll tell you why. Because the children's church guy said, we need a children's church team there for the crowd. So he took 15 people. He relocated them to Howick. And he said, you are going to be the children's church people. Now go and invite your friends. You need volunteers, etc. That children's church team brought in their unsaved friends. What about the guys in charge of worship? We need 2 bands. Why? Because one band can't do 365 days of the year. So the music guy gets 2 bands, reallocates these guys there, and then their job is to find musos in that community. 300 people, first meeting. It's very effective, and it strengthens you, build very quickly. You use the momentum of your mothership. You shouldn't use that word. And you don't have to relearn old lessons. For you to do that, though, you've got to have developed a way to multiply. And this is how you develop a way to multiply. What you do is you do 1 meeting, and then you do multiple meetings on the same site. And then you have this in mind as you move to 3 meetings. If I'm doing a children's curriculum, it needs to be on the web. It needs to be digital. It needs to be photostatable. It needs to be multipliable. And if you can multiply it 3 times, you can multiply it 30 times. You've got to have multiplication in your genetic. That's why I have a preaching team. I've got 15 guys around the table. Actually, I've got tons more than that. I've got a whole bunch of guys who sit. I was in Winchester in England about 3 years ago. And I was in the castle there and I saw, who's that? King Arthur's round table on the wall. I saw how many people you can sit around a table. I said to my wife, I want one of those. And my dad's our handyman back home, and so I asked him to make me this big round table, the Knights of the Round Table, just in case you've got delusions of grandeur. It's painted black and it's a rather dingy room. Anyway, we sit there. So the guys who are preaching are sitting around that table. I'm telling you, this is no joke. You can come to our preaching meetings. The walls around that room are lined with guys who are learning how to preach, who I haven't asked to come, have asked to come to that meeting. Why? Because they know there's life happening there, man. And if I can get 15 guys to be preaching along a similar theme, I'm not preaching their messages for them. I don't give them their outlines. They've got to come up with their own revelation, but they've got to work through the text with us. They've got to have the same verdict. They must be trying to achieve the same thing. And they've got to iron out all their wonky doctrine in that room before they take it out to the people. And while that's busy being muscled out, you're multiplying it 15 ways, you can multiply it 50 ways. So if you've got that in play, you can use that model. But you take that beyond six, you will have worship leaders who stop writing songs. You will have administrators who have nervous breakdowns. You will have children's church workers going to plant churches in Port Elizabeth. And you will have other guys getting sick. So it's a great way to get going. And I'll tell you how we've developed out of that, and I'll land this very quickly. So that looks complicated, and I probably shouldn't spend too much time here because it's a little bit down the track. But if I stand from here, can you still see me? Yes. Pretend you can cut this page in half. You see what? So on the top system there is what is done together, and on that side is what is done separately at the sites. You see, if you have a one church model or a specialist model, what can happen is that as soon as you get too many sites, if everything's hanging on one worship leader, everything's hanging on one administrator, it just stops, it just log jams. So you've got to ask yourself the question, what can be shared out at the sites and what is absolutely essentially got to be held together? That's the question we asked. So I think this model can roll out 100 sites. I'm going to be very quick because I think only 2% of this crowd is actually listening to me right now. So we'll start questions in a minute. Okay, far left-hand side. What I think we should do together, we should preach the same message. Why? Because you become what you eat. If you've got 100 different messages on a Sunday, you've got 100 different people groups busy being developed. And if that's your goal, cool. But if you want to keep it as one church, preach the same stuff, which means I think the same principle applies to multiple youth groups. So this model applies to our adult and our youth groups and our children's ministry. So our children have the same curriculum at every site. Our youth preachers also have preaching meetings that have got a similar theme that are running through the preaching. Why? Because we eat the same food. Our connect groups, which are our small groups, feed off Sunday. So that no matter whether they're in Moy River or in Ikopo, they're taking what's done on Sunday, not the same stuff, because any oak with half a brain says, I've done that already, but going deeper than Sunday and work that thing through the groups all over the place. So we're saying the conversation is the thing we're fighting for. The Word of God, our faith is what we're fighting for. The conversation on Sunday, conversation at youth group, conversation at children's church, conversation in the small groups, that's important. Find a way of having one message to the church. The second thing, I've written up there, if you can't read it, it's media and multiplication. And it's pointless at every site to have, you know, multiplying media teams. The media teams are the guys who can help you multiply everything that you've got. They can take your children's ministry and they can help you multiply it. Ray Oliver has just invented a new leadership training program. And so his leadership training program, the media boys come in with their cameras, they film Ray at the Howick site, and now all the sites can use that. So the media team, I think, is a central thing. I'm going to skip resources for a minute. The admin of the HR and all that legal stuff, little point in redoing that. Comp projects, that's our gap year program, our old age home, ministry to the poor, all that sort of stuff. We don't reinvent that at every single site. And so that essentially is what we do together. Everything else, absolutely everything else is carried by the sites to one degree or another. So that's the clue, one degree or another. Let me tell you some of the stuff that they do at the sites. The leading of all the small groups, the raising up of leaders, the integrating of new people in, the youth groups, the bands, the prayer, integration of new people into the church, leadership development, training of courses, evangelism, property maintenance and development, pastoring, counseling, family days, the 53 Sunday functions, our children's ministry, our babies' ministry, family, fathering issues, men's, ladies' meetings that happen at the sites. We have some collective ones that we do together and local site administration. That's all held by those site leaders. But here's the point. Grant, isn't this now back to the congregational model? Not if you have a look at what we've done here. We've split our sites into two categories of sites. Developing sites, the ones that are busy being planted, and developed sites, the ones that are rocking on with hundreds of people. The developed sites are carrying all the load of children's ministry, Fusion, which is their youth group, worship, all that stuff. They're carrying it. They're carrying the stuff up just absolutely by themselves. But all the sites that are busy being developed, that we're busy planting, we're planting one on campus at the moment, they've got like training wheels on them. And so the worship guy, the kids guy, the youth guy, the admin guy, they are responsible. The gurus, the central guys are responsible. Until that site can stand on its own, then we let it go. Got it? Okay, it was a little bit complicated. You can turn that one off, please, because that's a bit complicated. So, guys, I hope I've tried to race through that to give us a bit of questions in the next 10, 15 minutes. Can I just go back by way of concluding with my introduction? This is what we fight for. Our city's been saved. This is what we fight for. The gospel taken into those communities. We are going people. We are apostolic people. Apostolic means we go. The reason I've spoken about multi-site, one of the big reasons, is that when it is cluttered, when it is misunderstood, when it is handled badly, it can be like peanut butter. And you can get clogged into the conversation, you can get clogged into your city, you can stop going. When things become complicated, Jesus gets obscured. And so my humble recommendation would be this. If 90% of this is stuff that just doesn't interest you at all, and you're still thinking God says do multi-site, go the congregational way. Pick a good guy, give him some of Dudley's manuals, say, go my boy, and back him as best you can. If you're starting out and you say, actually, I've got a huge vision, I want to see sites of hundreds planted, hundreds of people planted, maybe you could look at the specialized thing where your worship leader's got more clout, more say than that congregational model. And but if you battle with energy, battle with releasing people, haven't got a conviction from God, for heaven's sake, forget it. Forget it for now. Okay, that's all I got to say. I hope that was helpful. Are there any questions? Yes, Mark. Yes. I'm not implying that you all hear the question. When you got multiple sites and you're celebrating multiple visionaries, how do you make sure that those visionaries all run in the same direction? I'm not advocating anarchy. I'm not advocating every man takes his own hill all by himself. You've got to have a strong visionary who's very secure, who's happy to let strong visionaries run. And the way that I do is I teach every time I'm together. I keep a very strong personal relationship with all my visionaries. So I think you want to hold them relationally. You want to hold them theologically. And the overwhelming vision in the future mustn't be too detailed and complex. They must see how they can fit in to where you're going and celebrate what they're doing. If you've got the guy's heart and the two agree together theologically, you should be able to walk together. And so that would be my short take on that. Yeah, different towns. Yeah, you know, we originally thought, how do you hold a church together that's in different towns? Our diameter is Ikopo is 80 kilometers one way, Moy River is 80 the other way. So that's 160 kilometers diameter. Maritzburg's in the middle. But remember, home groups are on the other sides of those. And in those country towns, they drive for like 30 kilometers. So we've got more than a 200 kilometer spread. We had to come to this understanding. Church is not a meeting. Church is people. So we've only actually, in the 7 years that we've been doing this, pulled the church together once. Just because of and that was this year. Pulled them together into a central venue. So I think it's like a mom and dad. You know, mom goes to work, dad goes to work, dad goes overseas. If mom and dad are connected, the family's together. If the leadership team is together, the family's together. So my elders, no matter how far they live apart, I meet with them twice a month. In Maritzburg, with me. The other twice a month when they meet, they're meeting in their zones out there where they are. But I mean, that's a practical thing that you guys work out. For my principle of holding a church together with geography like that is that we pull them together once a year for a big ladies conference. We pull them together once a year for a big men's conference. So that's only half the church coming together at one, half the other. I pull all the leaders together twice a year. Leadership summit at the beginning of the year, leadership summit in the middle of the year. And I put all the elders together twice a month. And that's enough of togetherness for us. Yeah, finances, yeah.
And then the second one is, how's apostolic input?
Yes.
Apostolic input into various churches work?
Okay. Okay, those are two great questions. How does finances work when you spread geographically and you've got multiple sites? Different guys have different models for it, but I'll tell you what we do. Is that we have a central fund that we've set budgets for each site. So we share the money, but the stewardship is looked after very carefully by a budget that the guys have complete license to spend on what they want. So if you've got a site and your budget is 20 grand, I don't come and say, you know, did you do an alpha with that 20 grand or did you, you know, pay the rent with that 20 grand? You look after that 20 grand. So that budget is set. So that means that the wealthier sites can look after the poorer sites. But CapEx, the buying of buildings and that stuff is not shared money. I'll tell you why. This is how we started sites. Our third site, so we went to the north as our second site. Then went into the township. This was our policy. Site number three, we took R1 million offering from the whole church to do up a warehouse like this. $1 million. 9 months later, we're going somewhere else. We asked the whole church for $1 million for another warehouse. 9 months later, we did another $1 million offering for a children's church facility at the main site. We suddenly realized every 9 months we were asking for $1 million, and the church was sort of saying, this is not very creative, you know what I'm saying? So we've stopped doing that. So sites now that we've started are generally in rented facilities, and the guys are busy buying their sites now. So when they go into a rented facility, just like a church plant, rented facility, they build it up. And the reason why we don't share our capital expenditure like that is that otherwise the church will be in a building fund until Jesus returns. And you've got to give them a breathing space. So we have a common running cost budget, but a separate CapEx budget. Okay, so that's money. As far as apostolic input, let me tell you the story of Tony Sievert. So his dad was a famous jockey, right? Hence his name. And rode a famous horse. One of our sites was struggling. But it happened to be in the middle of horse racing country, wherever. So the guy who led that site asked if Tony could come. Now, I mean, Tony had to, you know, probably have to deal with his ego because that site only had at that stage, what, like 40 people or something? So flying him all the way down to 40 guys, if I was there, I would have probably got him to come in on a horse, but they didn't. They just wheeled him in. And said, pretend you're a horse rider. But what we did is we used the name Sievert. We used him as an evangelist, just like he's using Stephen now. We used him as an evangelist. So he came. So that was the prime reason for him coming. But while he was down there, we cashed in on him. So we used him at a youth group here, and we chucked him at our main site in the evening. I can't remember where else. I was on leave then, eh? Yeah, I wasn't even in town. So generally, what we do is that we look at each site and say, what does that site need? Either apostolic voice, a prophetic voice, a teaching voice, an evangelist. What does it need? And so we bring the apostolic voice in for that site, and then just as a bonus, we just kill them on the other sites. So Sean Mackay is somewhere here. We brought him in because Ray Oliver wanted to use his testimony in Howick. But we found out in between inviting him and then that he was a soccer star. Now we got some township sites that love soccer. So how many times did you preach when you were with us, Sean? 11. Preached 11 times. He arrived on Friday night and we just about dropped him by Sunday afternoon. You can do it if you move them around. So it would be, you know, and then sometimes we would bring in, so we bring in team guys that just speak to elders. We'll fly a team guy in. And just for 2 days, spend time with the elders. He doesn't even preach on Sunday. He flies back to his place. So you've got to just ask yourself, why are we hooking with the apostolic team? What is our... our link. And I think it's on a number of levels. The one level is his gift, which I've been talking about now, the evangelist, the prophet. Another one is governmentally, which is fly the guy in, let him talk to your elders about solving these problems. They're two different things. Normally, we'll bring a guy in and he'll cover all those birds on one visit. He doesn't have to. And then thirdly, there's the thing of just being friends with a guy. And then there's the partnering into the nation. So we've just recently had one site take a team into Zim, as I've told you, one into Lesotho with Craig and the guys, one into Mozambique. And so I think apostolically, as you multiply yourself for Sunday meetings, what also happens is that your engagement apostolically happens on numerous fronts. This is what you do. What's that? Oh, no, no, no. What happens is that I've asked the guys to give me their names. Because let's just say they all wanted you. Let's just say you would get like a whole bunch of phone calls from NCF guys, and you'd think, oh, these oaks mad. Like, well, why don't they just have one oak phone me? So we do centralize the invitations just so that we can share it. Right. Have a tea. Excellent. Brilliant. Thank you.
Brilliant. I wasn't wanting to be rude there, but if you've got questions, I think you can ask Grant. What I do want to say as well is that this might, what Grant was saying about multi-site might not apply to you, or you may think it doesn't apply to you. I think it applies to you. If you've just planted a church, what he's talking about here is having an attitude of advancing the kingdom. And that's who we are. We're not about just maintaining. So you may think it's got nothing to do with you. I think it has everything to do with every one of us. Regardless of where you are, we want to see the kingdom advance. We want to see people get saved. So I trust that he's built some faith and excitement in your heart. I just also want to say this. We are blessed to be part of this tribe. I've spent the last 2 weeks, I've spent with two men who both lead a church who are part of some other thing, and it's not the thing that you're thinking of, in case, but they are crying for relationship. What they're involved in is something that's is pretty new. It's a kind of movement like ours, but they reckon it's a resource tool. They are crying for relationship. They're desperate for relationship, and we are so blessed, aren't we? I love this tribe that I'm involved in. I don't want to, the first 3 years that we planted this church, I was alone. I don't want to go back there. I've got this resource, this friendship, this people, this relationship. It's brilliant. I love what we're involved in. Brilliant, Grant. Bless you guys. There's lots of coffee left, two stations, and there's also food. So please don't rush off. If you have to rush off, grab a chai and on your way. God bless you.